This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Yesterday, President Obama said he would send up to 300 U.S. Special Operations Forces to assess the situation in Iraq, where ISIS continues to advance. Georgia Republican Senator Saxby Chambliss is the ranking minority member on the Senate Intelligence Committee. He joins us once again. Senator, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks, Dennis. Always good to be with you.
Yesterday, when you were talking about the president's speech yesterday, you said the president needed to clarify a goal as to what this mission would be. But isn't that the purpose of this mission? I mean, isn't it hard to know what the goal of our reaction would be until we actually get there and get better intelligence? And isn't that what this special forces deployment would be?
Well, we've got intelligence operatives on the ground, both our own folks as well as some liaison folks that have provided us with some of the intelligence about the movement on the ground. But we also have what we call ISR, Dennis, which is either drones or, in some cases, we've actually got tactical aircraft flying overhead. So we have some idea about where these folks are and where they're trying to move to with respect to taking the next territory. And what I have said about the president is that, you know, it's kind of like the surge. I was a big David Petraeus fan, still am, and when General Petraeus said he wanted to carry out the surge, even though I have such great respect for him, I said, whoa, let's wait a minute. Let's talk about what the goal is, how we're going to achieve that goal. Same thing here. If the president wants to put boots on the ground, what is the intention relative to those 300 folks? He has not made that clear. The only thing he said is that they will be in a joint operation with the Iraqi security forces. Well, we're not going to approve boots on the ground at this point, I assure you. But if we're going to carry out airstrikes, we've got to have some idea of the coordinates that need to be given to our pilots and whatnot. If that's what he's planning on, just tell us. But he hasn't done that yet, and I do think he owes it to the American people when he says we're going to inject troops back into Iraq, even though it's a limited number. What is the goal, and how are we going to achieve that goal?
But wouldn't the extra manpower allow us to get better intelligence? I mean, for some time now, there'd been the question of whether ISIS had even seized that key oil facility, and we weren't quite sure what the answer was. So doesn't that tell us, look, we just need better intelligence before we decide what we're going to do?
Well, sending 300 special forces in there is not going to give us that capability. We have both contractor as well as some intel officers inside Iraq today. They're very capable. They have been limited in their movement, but putting 200 Special Forces guys in there is not going to help that. We're capable of gathering intel on issues like who controls the refinery at Baji through ISR, through sending a drone overhead or sending an aircraft of some other sort overhead and figuring that out.
Are we in a very complicated situation here? Because on the one hand, almost any kind of intervention runs the risk of us being perceived as taking sides in a sectarian fight. And yet, if we allow ISIS to advance, doesn't that increase the threat of instability in the region? So isn't this a very complicated and difficult decision?
No question about it. And that's the very question, Dennis, that has to be answered and why we need a plan from the president. If we just go in and carry out airstrikes, we'd probably kill a lot of bad guys. Unfortunately, we'd probably kill some innocent people, and we would be picking sides. And the United States Air Force does not belong to Prime Minister Maliki. The commander-in-chief has got to make the decision on what kind, if any, support we're going to give. The one thing this has developed into that's pretty clear to those of us who have been following it is that it has become a Sunni versus Shia conflict, even though it's still in minimal stages right now. That's what's developed. Well, that's been going on for hundreds of years. we're not going to solve that problem. Particularly, we're not going to solve it if we go in on one side or the other. And the president's just got to be very careful, and frankly, I think he's being very cautious. But we got to be very careful that we don't pick sides with whatever type of support we give.
How difficult is it to make a decision like this in a very complicated situation when the partisan atmosphere in both the White House and Congress is where it is? On the one hand, you have a president who has been criticized for going around Congress in the Sergeant Bergdahl episode, and you also have a Congress where at least some members of the opposition will boil an answer to a complicated question down to how can we make the president look bad? How difficult is it to make these very difficult and complex decisions in consultation with each other in that kind of atmosphere?
Well, that's just the nature of our political system in this country. And while it this particular decision is having to be made, you know, 4 months, 4.5 months out from an election, very critical election, that's the job of the president. That's why the job of the president is the most difficult job in the world. He's got to do the right thing, irrespective of the political consequences. If he puts politics first, then he's going to make the wrong decision for America, and we're going to suffer in the short term and the long term by that. He's right to engage Congress, but at the end of the day, it is his decision. He's surrounded by good military advisors. That's who he needs to be listening to. He does not need policymakers to tell him what to do. He can ask our opinion. But at the end of the day, his decision needs to be based primarily on what the military experts tell him we need to be doing, irrespective of politics.
One reason that you and others have mentioned for us to make sure that we stay engaged in whatever way we decide is our dependence on oil still. But is that a reason for going to war or even engaging short of that?
The issue of oil is definitely not a reason to go to war. We didn't do that originally in Iraq. I think that was validated in spite of some criticisms that that was the case, and it definitely should not be now. The issue, Dennis, is so complex. I mean, when you look at the fact that you have Shia versus Sunni inside of Iraq today, you have the potential for this extremist group that actually is even a break-off from al-Qaeda because they were more extreme than core al-Qaeda, you have the potential for them to take parts of Iraq, to use that as a training ground for terrorist activity, much like what's happening in Syria today, where some of these same folks are fighting Sunni versus Sunni, Sunni versus Shia. The Iranians are involved in both Syria and Iraq. We're on the same side with the Iranians in Iraq. We're on the opposite side of the Iranians in Syria. The issue of oil is just one of the very complex issues that we're engaged with relative to what do we do in both Syria and Iraq. So it's an issue. It's got to be dealt with, but it certainly is not the overriding issue.
How closely should we work with Iran here? I asked Ambassador Samantha Power, UN ambassador, that same question when it comes to Syria, because doesn't the U.S., at least in some areas, have common interests with Iran here, and how can we work with them?
Again, part of the very complexity of the issue is the Iranian situation. We cannot trust the Iranians. We are very cautious in our dealing with them, or we should be very cautious in our dealing with them, because of the nuclear weapons issue. But at the same time, there is a common interest there, and that is to try to stabilize Iraq. But of course, what the Iranians want to do, they want to stabilize it, but they want to dictate who runs it and how they run it. That's not our goal, and that's why we have to be so careful and not trust one thing the Iranians tell us.
But does that mean not talking to them?
Well, you've got to talk to them because you're going to have Iranian special operations forces inside of Iraq. You're going to have U.S. forces. The last thing we need is some sort of conflict being generated there that has nothing to do with the purpose of, and both of them being there. So obviously there has to be some conversation, but just don't trust them, Mr. President.
From your work on the Intelligence Committee, do we have any clear sense as to how big a threat ISIS is beyond where it is right now? Obviously, they're committing terrible atrocities where they are, but do we know how potent they can be?
We know that ISIS originally was a member of Core Al-Qaeda, as I said earlier, that they broke off from that group because they're more extreme from the standpoint of terrorist activity and their Islamic beliefs than are Core Al-Qaeda. That means they're some of the most dangerous terrorists in the world, and we darn well better know and understand that if we leave them there occupying any part of Iraq, that they have complete control over. They're going to use that area of Iraq, just like in Syria, to train militants, to train terrorists who will have as one of their purposes to kill and harm Americans. So that's why there is a national security interest for the United States in Iraq today, but it's also why it's so complex and such a fine line that we have to walk to try to determine to what extent we should be engaged.
Do we know whether they're getting any funding from, they have a lot of funding, but do we know whether they're getting any from governments in the region?
They undoubtedly are. There's probably a lot of private money flowing in there. But the one thing we do know in the conversations that we have had thus far with our allies in the region, there has to be, as a part of trying to achieve stability inside of Iraq, there's got to be a political solution as well as a military solution in Iraq. And what that means is Maliki has to go. He is not capable of providing the leadership that's necessary. He is he's fostered this Shia versus Sunni conflict. And it's been pretty clear from our friends that that simply can't be the case, and he's going to have to go. Trying to
replaced
do that
by
in
what,
the
though?
Middle of all of this, since you've just had a presidential election, is, again, part of the complexity and part of the complication that we're facing.
This is a difficult question because it goes into hindsight, but looking back at what has happened since and the risk that Iraq could simply disintegrate, should we have gone into war the way we did in 2003, going to Baghdad and toppling Saddam even? I mean, how much more stable are we now, and how much safer are we now than we were then?
The better question is, what mistakes did we make coming out of Iraq? I think still it was the right decision going in, based on the intelligence that we had. But when we came, and we prevailed, once the surge was completed, Iraq, it's never going to be a totally peaceful country, but the attacks were down in a very significant way. But then when we came out of Iraq, we left no troops there. Now, if you look back at previous conflicts that we've been engaged in where we did prevail, we have always left troops on the ground to try to maintain some security and stability. We didn't do that here. When that happened, and it's easy to look back and say, I told you so, we really can't afford to do that now. We got to look forward, and we got to figure out the way out of this. But at the same time, we got to make sure that we're learning a lesson from Iraq when it comes to Afghanistan.
Georgia Republican Senator Saxby Chambliss is the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Senator, thanks so much once again for giving us this time. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dennis.